Feels good to be home. We all are excited about this year. So let's get it started off the right way.
Montrezl Harrell puts it back in. He has been a problem tonight. And now Birch just got his pocket picked by Neto, who goes down the floor and lays it in. And the Raptors are down by 20. This is a nightmare right now.
Oh, we're trying things, a lot of things, and none of it which worked tonight. The only thing I really was upset about or you know, that I felt that I let our group down was just we didn't fight, like, enough. You know, it just wasn't. We didn't play hard enough, tough enough, smart enough. And that's the stuff that you can control.
Just a little bit. Didn't handle the moment very well, I don't think. I mean, in like lots of areas, you know.
Good morning. Good morning.
It's not.
Oh,
I'm just kidding.
Hey, guess what? The Raptors can't score. What a shock to everyone. Good morning. Everyone's all just rattled this morning. I can't believe Svi Mykhailiuk wasn't going to carry the Raptors to a top 10 offense this season. It's the Fan Morning Show. I'm JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy. Raptors. I got to tell you, I'm just actually going to start with this. Last night, that sucked. That was just a boring rock fight from the Raptors. Just hard to watch. But there's 82 of these things, and I don't have any beliefs in my head that the Raps are going to be going deep in the playoffs this season. And I don't know if it's because I just like a story like this or whatever, but to me, the ends justified the means in getting the Delano Banton game. I actually feel as though, you know how there was the season opener that was the CJ Miles game where we all thought CJ Miles was going to be the greatest free agent signing in Raptors history?
He was a good free agent signing for a year.
Yeah, he was. But that was kind of, and we'll get into the actual nuts and bolts of this game in a second, but he hits that shot and he has that moment where the Raptors kind of make a bit of a push. He's feeling himself. He feels empowered. He's getting to the basket. It had like this cool feel, like a high school feel to it that I really enjoyed. And I will say that people said, oh, that sucked. And I was getting some texts from some friends like, wow, this is bad. Or how bad are we? Blah, blah, blah. The classic game one overreactions that you get. But I enjoyed the Delano Banton game. Am I a monster?
No.
Or am I?
No, you're the opposite.
Am I too soft?
I had his jersey in my cart last night, and I had to talk myself down.
Super discount.
It was like the super discount version. I'm like, it's $50. Like, he's a local guy, and then
you're
like,
doing too
maybe
much.
I'm just gonna give him like a couple weeks to see how I feel.
Honestly,
about that.
I feel as though if he saw you at the game wearing his jersey,
he'd be like, do I know this girl? Yeah. Or like, am I related to her? Or?
He'd be like, what's up with this?
That's why I decided not to get it. But no, I think that was awesome. Like, so you tweeted it too. Has there ever been a better bucket in Raptors history? No.
No, you got that? Power index?
Yeah. Blake, what's a better one?
That's it. It's half-court buzzer beater.
Yeah, you can't beat that.
You can't top that. Like, short of maybe, like, absolutely crowning someone with a dunk.
Well, I also thought this, when I tweeted that, I was also thinking the context of it, too, that it's the Rexdale kid that gets into the game and he gets a pop. And normally when you see guys who are getting their first opportunity in the pros, especially in front of a hometown audience, they press. Okay, you know this. And maybe you're actually built different and I'm
smoke emoji.
But I know that. So when I was in high school, if I knew that, for example, a girl I had a crush on was coming to one of my games.
Oh, you try way harder.
I was a choker. Like,
serious?
Oh, yeah. It was basically, oh, there's a cute girl right there. Oh, and guess what? Old Bunk is 3 of 15. Like, no question about it. Now he's pressing. Now there's turnovers. Why did you try to throw that behind the back pass? Like, what are you talking about? I always throw that. No, you don't.
I can't say the same.
Yeah, you're just high stakes, high pressure. I'm just saying your whole family's coming down to Dartmouth. They're coming to see the game tonight. Your friends are coming to Markham to watch the game. They're going to pack in. You didn't feel it a little? You never thought?
The first game I ever played in pro, I got my first goal and only goal.
Don't say that.
Yeah, but I got my first goal, and it was, you know, all my friends are there. My family was there. It was my first ever professional game.
So that's why you want Banton jersey, because you relate
to
him.
I feel him. Yeah. But
let's hope he has a better follow-up.
Yeah. Okay, relax. See, I did the laugh thing.
Yeah,
and he's all sad.
See,
yeah,
he's
sad.
All sad. He's got a sad. You know what, though?
6:05 and I'm in your head.
That's great. That's
in the kitchen breaking dishes.
I love that about radio. You can just lie about what the other person's doing.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Blake's bawling his eyes out over
he's
there.
Crying. God, Blake, stop crying everywhere.
So embarrassing.
Every day with the crying in here, just enough. Enough is enough. So
you guys don't realize it. You're pressing some buttons right now.
Good.
You're picking at some wounds. Right.
That's okay.
Bring the fire.
We can be all right with it. So, all right. I'm a choker. Ailish, not a choker. Scores when she's in front of her whole family. She gets the boost. She gets the Banton boost. You, finally. Were you a choker?
He's a hesitant shooter.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that's just my style of game. Hockey, I was always fine. In high school, no girls are showing up to watch your wrestling meet.
Yeah. Oh, God. That's like the least attractive sport I think I would ever watch.
The last thing I ever want to hear? Wrestling meet.
Yeah. Well, I didn't.
Actually, when you say it like that, I don't like
we're
that.
We're talking about EE, not EA.
But still, I don't want to see your wrestling meet.
Yeah, I know. He's like, no girls want to show up and see my wrestling meet there. I was like, yeah. Is that what you said to them? Like,
well, you
come
guys
see my
now,
wrestling meet?
You guys see like, now nah. how we stumbled on wrestling brain as a term.
Yeah.
We trialed some other ones first.
I'm just saying. It's like
there's wrestling ear. There's wrestling meat. And then, you know what? Maybe we should just go wrestling brain.
No one wants to see my wrestling meat. Okay, go to your room.
I don't think there's a least attractive sport to go like watch your significant other
they
than
were,
wrestling.
They were not well attended.
Yeah. What a shocker.
so no pressure.
Yeah, what a complete upset. Yeah.
Hockey, I never had trouble with it, though. Like, my favorite rink in Cambridge is, like, in the food court of the mall.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
Yeah, it's always great to, like, have a weeknight game close to. And this is more like post actually playing adult men's league, but getting to play at a weeknight game at Christmas time.
It's like a Manchu walk in the background.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm getting distracted because I want that honey garlic chicken.
Yeah, that's right.
Man, I told myself only if I get on the scoreboard do I get that two meat and a noodle combo.
They need to do a Rogers hometown hockey in that arena.
Well, they were just in North Dumfries. Yeah, well, I don't think we're going
to
get
the
Cambridge
mall one
right.
Next week.
Sweet.
Back, right back where we just did it.
Yeah.
So we joked about it off the top, but I wasn't surprised that the Raptors' offense sucked. I expect them to be a bad offense this season. In fact, one of the props that I had from yesterday is how many times is this going to happen where the Raptors don't crack 100 points? And I think that it's going to be a thing. It won't be their average. If you look at last season, for example, the Cavaliers had the league's worst offense. They averaged 103 points.
Yeah, and the pace of play is just too high.
Right, exactly. So the Raps are going to average over 100. But I do think that what you saw yesterday is going to be pretty common, especially until you see the return of Pascal Siakam, where they just don't have a primary option. As much as I love OG Anunoby, and as much as I'm excited about his growth and excited to see him get more possessions on the offensive end, you could see last night that, hey, there's a pretty stark difference between the regular season and the preseason. That was one of the funny things about the broadcast. They were like, the preseason, they were doing great in the preseason. I've heard this. I was like, yeah.
Also, they weren't doing that great in the preseason. Yeah. Like, OG was cool and Scotty was cool, but it's not like they were dominating teams.
Yeah.
And
I just,
like, oh, yeah, Sam Decker swung your net rating for the preseason. Come on.
So let me just ask the two of you. Did anything surprise from last night?
Is it too early for math?
No.
No.
You guys know what I mean when I say...
But I did learn of what the law of large numbers is. So to this morning. So I'm feeling
very smart.
This morning
you had time to learn about the law of something.
Large numbers. Yeah. So I was just listening to a podcast about it. And now I'm ready. I feel more equipped to...
Well, during the break, I'd like
back.
To learn.
It's actually pretty easy. So...
Yeah.
Yeah, give us some numbers.
Blake just Googled it, didn't you?
Yeah, I just want to make sure I'm thinking of the right thing.
Yeah, I know. And I'm saying this is about the easiest concept. That
yeah,
you can
it doesn't grasp. Even need to be a little
numbers. No. This is it. Numbers get larger as they go up.
Yes, that's it. You got it.
Yes. Yeah, as you count, the number gets bigger.
That's what I listened to a podcast on that. I was like, huh, so one.
And then two
and
is
then
bigger
two
than
is
one.
More, and then three is more than that, two. Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's just that. Yeah, it's more the best example is like, okay, the Cavs last year averaged 103 points and they're the worst team. That doesn't mean you can't have an 83-point game. It means over 82 games, everyone's going to kind of narrow into a tighter band.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Got it.
More information, better understanding is basically the easiest way to break it down. So go on. Give us your
last
math.
Night. the Raptors. So this is where I'm surprised. I'm not surprised at all. I've been warning everyone, including on this show, that the half-court offense was going to be a struggle. However,
how dare you say, including on the show, talk down to us that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
However, last night's performance per cleaning the glass, a 0 percentile offensive performance.
Zero percentile.
So, you know, if, how percentiles work, the 100th percentile is your best performance.
I got it.
50th is the average or the median. Zero. And that's not just for the Raptors. That's, they did not have a game that bad offensively all of last season.
So is it compared to the year before?
It's compared. Well, yeah. So cleaning the glass controls for, like, right now it's referencing all individual team games from last year because we don't have enough games yet this year. But the Raptors did not have a single game. And remember how bad last season got at some point. They did not have a game even close to that bad offensively. The last time, you'd have to go back. Remember that Miami Heat game where they shot like 4 of 30 against the zone or whatever? That's how far back you have to go to the last time the Raptors played this poorly.
Great.
And so where I'm surprised is not only the extremity of it, it was a 0 percentile half court offensive performance, not quite as surprising. They were also really bad in transition. And that's where the big surprise came to me, because that's the whole reason they play the style of defense they do. The whole idea is get the easy buckets and get the free stuff on the break. And they averaged 0.75 points per transition opportunity, which is not quite 0 percentile.
Pretty close, though.
But it's 8th percentile. It's right down there. That is, you force all those turnovers. Yeah. You take a fifth of your shots on the break, and you get nothing out of it.
So, again, I'm sure that part of this is quote-unquote score effects, right? Where one team lets up off the gas a bit because of the situation of the game. But the Raptors did hold them to under 100 points.
Yeah.
And I thought, hey, you know, that is going to be part of the identity of this team, is that, and for a large stretch of the early portion, the offense was horrific. And I kept thinking, you know, at least, but this game's not a runaway yet. It didn't happen until later in the ballgame, but, you know, it was around 7.
Yeah. They got it down to 10 in the fourth again. It's the classic Matt Devlin. Like, there's only 4 minutes. Leads down to 15.
I did laugh at one of those calls where I think the Raptors got a bucket that cut it to 17. And it was like,
wow,
gets the offensive rebound.
Here we go.
17 points. You're like, yes.
Yeah. I didn't have a ton of issue with it. Like, obviously there were defensive mistakes and stuff, but they forced 22 turnovers.
Well,
and they cleaned up the defensive glass. They did the two big things that
they're
looking
expected
at.
To. Yeah.
Right. And or one thing they're expected to, and one thing we're worried about.
Yeah.
They handled the defensive glass pretty well. They pulled in 83% of their defensive rebounds, which is great.
So you're talking about things that surprised you still. Mine would be the first unit. Like, what? What happened there?
The starters?
The starters. Where was Fred? I thought it was very quiet. I actually was mostly impressed with the young guys. I think also because I'm relating to, like, oh, the excitement of them coming out. And they you know, they went for a little bit of a run there. Scotty definitely, you know, had his moments. And obviously, Banton, our boy. Yeah, it was exciting. But I expected a little bit more. And I think maybe I'm seeing some of the presence of having Lowry, that steady veteran. Like, when you're down, I think at one point they were down over 20 points. And I think that that's when you would be relying on your veterans, and they only have 2 or 3, right? So I think maybe I felt like I was missing that presence already. I know it's early, but things that surprised me was I didn't feel that smoke emoji, Fred, bet on yourself kind of moment that I would hope for back on home court.
So certainly Fred and OG having the games they did, they combined to shoot 8 of 37.
It's tough.
And 3 of 18 on threes. That's a big part of this. The starters played 11 minutes together and got outscored by 11 points. That Washington Wizards starting five is not going to be an elite starting five. That is not a deadly opponent that you're matching up with there. But this is something that I had wanted to talk about. And we'll probably get to it later with Will, because, JD, this is something you and I have talked with Will about before, is I'm a little surprised that Dragic and Achiuwa were the call as the starters. Like, I know that that's who started more in the preseason, but I think you flip them, like Trent and Birch. I think it just, it balances the two units a little better and gets people in more.
I like that.
Roles that suit them better.
And I think that we're going to talk all day today about whether or not there's already going to be tweaks to the starting lineup. And you mentioned it yesterday with Grange, how eventually Nurse will likely settle into one that is more definitive. To me, that was more of a sign of respect to a veteran in Dragic to say, hey, we're going to put you in the starting lineup last night. But that eventually, yes, he's going to fade out of it. I think that last night's game is actually pretty easy to summarize. It's OG struggled, which put them in a really tough spot. And he just doesn't have the repetitions yet of a 1A scorer where he's going to feel comfortable continuing to insert himself in a game. It kind of felt like he looked like a guy who didn't have it and then shied away from going after it, which caused the, if we're doing, what are those called? The machines where you put a marble down something and it starts to go and causes all the other effects. Then a cup falls down and it keeps pushing the marble.
What are those things?
Someone tweeted at me right now, please.
No one's okay.
Isn't that just like a thing you build in your living room? Like,
no, it's like a lot of people. It's like a nerdy contraption that
I was going to say. This is
usually,
you guys make fun of me for being a nerd. Building one of those in my living room is a very like Back to the Future thing, though, right? Where my alarm goes off and suddenly my toast is
bad. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking of. So the next reaction in the chain is all of a sudden Fred VanVleet is trying to do too much. And I love Fred, but you can always tell watching a Raptors game when it's like if he has to be the primary scorer and it's not just coming to him and he's not just red hot, you go, this isn't what we want here. This isn't a way to have a good offense, is letting Fred VanVleet try to create an isolation. And then I thought what you said about the transition was very true. It's like sometimes they would get stops and you would watch the Raps get out like in the break, and it felt like they were just missing bunnies. And you can't do that when you have an offense that right now is built around OG Anunoby trying to find himself as an offensive player. Fred VanVleet, who's 5'11", or he's about as 6 feet as Blake is 5'10".
I'm taller than him.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a picture of us standing next to each other.
That's what I'm saying. It's like he's not 6 feet tall. That's what he's listed. I think he was listed as. But either way, so it just, and to me, that was it. That was the story of the game.
And this is where, you know, Siakam coming back or OG being better is going to help. You know, there's going to be a high tide rises all boats thing here where VanVleet has to have the ball in his hands a lot right now. And he's going to, like, as much as you don't want to see a 5 of 20 shooting line and 1 of 9 of threes, it's like, okay, well, you don't have it. Maybe be more of a playmaker. They don't have a lot of guys who can create their own shot. And some of those VanVleet misses were just, like, tough pushes and transition stuff. But I think what we're going to see is that, you know, it makes all the sense in the world to give a lot of these on-ball reps to VanVleet. But we've seen over the last couple of years that he's a little more effective when he can play off the ball a little bit more and use that shooting capability and that relocation capability. And that's something that, you know, it's not going to rely just on Fred. It's going to rely on other guys being able to handle the ball a little bit more so he can get off of it.
Did you feel like OG was taking a lot of more difficult shots than he should have? Like, I didn't seem like it was the easy decision at times.
I didn't feel that way.
He was choking up a bit, or what do you
I liked
think?
The shots he took. I thought that the aggression was okay at times, especially late once the game got close and he started to attack the rim a little bit more. I thought that was better. Early it was a lot of shot, but and he did try to show off that he has been working on that step back three, that preseason stuff. He wants it. That's there. That's going to be part of the arsenal this season. And the
maybe
hope
that's
is,
what looked different.
Well, I think that the hope is, well, one, I it's my Gary Trent Jr. thing. How mad can I be with the shot that you take when you pull up for a three in transition when everybody else around you stinks, right? How mad can I be when the other options are not doing much? With OG, I would rather see him. It was why I loved that Nick Nurse stuck with Scotty Barnes as much as he did, and that there would be possessions where Scotty would do stuff. He would basically be freelancing, and you could tell how raw his game is just from what he was trying to do on offense, where it's like you can tell when you're watching a basketball player who's kind of making up a move on the fly rather than somebody who has a refined move like a DeMar DeRozan mid-range shot, right? Where it's like this is footwork that has been years and years cultivated in a gym versus Scotty Barnes, where he's running at the basket with all of his energy and then spinning and shooting a hook shot in that is like, I think that might have been the first time he ever did that. Or if in a game, maybe in a practice one or two times. OG, he was the ultimate process versus results game to me, where it was like, I actually didn't mind the shots. I just didn't like that he looked uncomfortable in his role. To me, there was a body language component of, this is a guy who says, I don't shoot to miss. This is a guy who always looks like he's sure of himself. And in that game, there were just moments where I thought, hey, OG doesn't look like OG. He looks uncomfortable.
Yeah, and so the shot mix is something that, you know, this is this is the trade-off you accept. If you want OG to be able to expand his game and give you 20 points and be a little bit of a self-creation threat, you're going to have to live with some nights like this. And I thought, yeah, the step-back threes are one thing, and he took three long twos, all of them off the dribble. But really, like, he shot 1 of 5 in the paint and then would have had another bucket or free throws on that weird overturned call late in the game. Like, it wasn't that far off of being a decent Anunoby game. You know, one more three drops, and then he gets that Beal call, and he he connects on a couple of those bunnies. And obviously, you could do that with any player. Oh, if they hit all their shots, their game would have been better. But again,
no, but on average, OG plays that game 10 times. He scores 22, 23 points.
Which is
points.
Why we took the over 18.5.
Yeah. I didn't. I do think there's, to you guys.
There's a little bit to what you're saying about the comfort level. And I thought it was maybe a little telling. And maybe it's a point to build off for him to see some shots go down. But the most comfortable and in the flow he looked was later in the game when, you know, they were down big and he wasn't self-creating.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, but this is going to be the push pull is you need him to do that. Maybe you don't need him to take 17 shots and five or six of them, you know, pull up jumpers, but you need him to carry probably the second highest offensive volume right now after Fred. And I thought, are you guys okay if I come back to something on Fred?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, no.
So
no, now, so here's my thing on Fred. No, of course, go ahead. What do you?
So yeah, he had a really poor game, and
doing too much.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about, you know, JD. I know you felt strongly about the New York Times interview with Pascal Siakam and what that says about leadership. And I thought the quote that we played coming in from Fred VanVleet was a good one. And like,
what was it again?
I'm trying to find it now. He took a lot of the ownership of this, and he was asked at the end of his presser, how does he as a leader keep everyone calm for 48 minutes? And he said, if I play better, they're more calm. And he said, make shots, 5 for 20, 3 turnovers, 4 assists is not going to get it done.
That's too many shots for Fred VanVleet. I'm sorry. Him as an initiator. This is why the Kyle Lowry comparison has always bothered me. I'm like, I think that there are nights where Fred can look like Kyle offensively when the 3-point shot is dropping. But to me, I don't think that he's comparable offensively. And this is my problem with Fred. I actually really am a huge Fred VanVleet fan, but when you put winning pieces around Fred, he knows how to get the best out of everybody. And he is also someone who's really, really smart. And last night, again, this is not a fault of Fred. He knew he had to do more.
Yeah,
so it's when I hear that quote,
exactly.
When I hear that quote, I think of what I saw in that game, which is he was looking around him, seeing OG struggle, seeing Precious provide nothing, seeing Dragic basically at the end of possessions go, okay, so I guess I just have to do something here and create for myself. Seeing Scottie Barnes and going, well, you know what? I need to insert my offense into this game. I need to push it. The problem is when Fred's not hot, it doesn't look very good.
Mm-hmm. And so here's the part of the quote I wanted to get to that I think is my larger point here. So this is Fred. I'm not going to be everybody's shrink on the floor all the time, making sure they're calm. Mm. But if I'm playing good, that's a calming presence. And to me, that's what we missed tonight. And I just thought, yeah, that's too many shots. That's forcing it a little bit, trying to control. But I loved that element of leadership that there are a lot of guys in that locker room probably looking down at their feet after the game and be like, oh, you know, the momentum I had in summer league or in camp or in preseason, you know, I struggled. And then to have your guy who, whether or not he's the man big picture, is the man right now, be like, no, this is on me. If I play better, you're all in a better situation. I just thought that was a really good moment of leadership. And we've talked a lot about how VanVleet's so strong in those roles. But you know, first game of the season and you bookend it with you're the one thanking the crowd to be back. And then at the end, you're the one taking all of the kind of tone setting onto your shoulders. I thought it was a nice little snapshot of Fred. You know, we talked a lot about Kyle's gone. This is Fred's team now from a leadership perspective. I thought that was a great example of it.
I think it gives the young players a lot of accountability and understanding like what their role is when they see their front facing guy take some of that in stride and say, hey, I could have been better. And if I am better, this team like, I understand my impact as a leader, and it's going to be something that everyone can learn from. I've played with players that are exactly like that, like that understand their body language in the room, their what they're saying, what's being reported by the press afterwards. Like, that's what we're looking at. Like, we as fans, that's what we're thinking. Okay, the Raptors are in a good place because they have a good leader. Like, I'm not too worried about, you know, what's going to happen down the line, because it seems like Fred VanVleet, it has a steady head, or he's at least understanding that he's got a big role to play this season. It could have been much different if he was like, oh, you know, it's disappointing, the crowd was back and we blew it and blah, blah, blah. But
well,
he has
that.
Or
if he did the old Kyle and DeMar from the playoffs of like, okay, what do you want me to do? I'm going to have to force shots or empty the clip or something like that, which were great quotes, but are not how you want a top guy to operate.
I'm just trying to take a little bit of positivity from
that. Me too.
Okay, but I actually feel like now we're trending into the overly positivity. Mm-hmm. We're like, the process.
No, I thought the game sucked.
No, but hold on. Let me just finish this thought. So I asked you guys what was most surprising to you about game one. This was kind of how we started this conversation. To me, Fred VanVleet being a good leader is the least surprising thing from the game.
I just wanted to comment on it. I thought it was great.
This is not like a, hey, these observations stink or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm just looking at it and saying, if I'm doing my, like, we want to do Blake's concern index, the thing that I've never wavered on when it comes to this Raptor season, like, if you ask me, hey, what are the things that you feel best about? Right. One of them is Fred knowing what buttons to push, the respect he commands in that locker room, knowing what he's going to do. Fred VanVleet doesn't want to have to try to take over a basketball game like he did in that one. Like, I think that he understands. You know, I always heard these stories about the Rico Hines runs, how it's like Fred's teams never lose. And I think that there's a truth to this. So Fred VanVleet is just a winner. If you put him in a winning situation, he's going to know how to fit in. He's going to know how to insert himself. He's just the kind of guy who knows what levers to pull at the right times. I'm just saying that if the lever that he's being asked to pull is primary scorer, your team is going to really struggle, because there's not a lot of teams in the NBA where primary scorer under 6 foot works for you. You know, that's literally like the two Isaiah Thomases, where they've had the two good seasons, the one good season for the other Isaiah Thomas, the Hall of Fame career for the first Isaiah Thomas. But yeah, there's not really a great track record of that historically in the league. Chris Paul, it's very, very, very
depending on how much you want to believe Kyle Lowry's listed height.
If we're going to do the like thing that was positive from a leadership standpoint, this is reading way too much into something, but I really liked seeing the shots of Pascal Siakam on the sidelines and how supportive and energetic he was.
Fired up in that fake comeback.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
He was leading the charge.
You know who else had a Delano Banton jersey in their cart at one point, Ailish? Yeah. Pascal Siakam.
I feel the vibes.
Yeah, so I just think Siakam is a genuine guy.
Yeah.
And that's why he puts his foot in his mouth sometimes, is because he's trying to kind of tell you how he's feeling about something.
Yeah, authenticity doesn't mean it's always going to be the right thing to say.
So I just thought it was a nice sign to see him be that engaged with this team.
How about Drake on the sidelines throwing
again, least surprising
technical fouls what was it that he
Montrezl Harrell overreacting? Former
they got in a fight while the game was going.
No, I think that Come was on. Mostly jokey, and the ref told them to cut it out, and they kept going. And the refs,
that's a win for the Raptors.
JD's favorite. The refs trying to ref show.
Well, yeah,
trying to show up Drake. You can't give Drake a text.
So I thought Drake's outfit was like so anticlimactic again.
You are so harsh on people's outfits. I'm self conscious coming in here now.
No,
Ailish
because
like, every day,
Jack and Matt.
Yeah, Jack and Matt looked amazing last night, and at last preseason game they had Drake on the broadcast, and Drake was saying, oh man, like, I'm gonna have the greatest outfit for home opener, like, just you wait. And he showed up in a gray hoodie.
But this is
I'm wearing a gray hoodie.
Yeah, you are, but you're not Drake, you're not sidelined, you're not the global ambassador. And
this is such a Drake thing though, to dramatically overdress for a preseason game and then in a big moment
he promised
be like
the fans I was
I know,
ready
it's
for
just
it
a very Drake thing.
But the Matt and Jack looked
so
awesome.
To close out on your most surprising thing, thought.
Oh.
I
thought you were asking me.
Well, I figure you're going to close the segment.
No. Okay. Well, I mean, if you ask me.
I'm going to reiterate that we knew a lot of the stuff this season was going to be hard. Mm-hmm. The biggest surprise to me was, and I think the best example of this is forcing 22 turnovers and only getting 17 points off of them. Mm-hmm. But the easy stuff was also really hard in this game. And that's What if we're talking, if we're teeing up concern index later, the easy stuff being difficult against a very bad team was a little surprising because that's always where the Raptors thrive.
Yeah, that was a new feeling of with the Raptors teams in the past. And I think this is actually where the Lowry vacuum really hits, right? And no Siakam to a lesser extent, but you always feel like you're watching a Raptors team where there's at least a plan and there's a hierarchy and then you know what the what people do here, right? You know what things you can do, what things this person... Last night was a game where it was just a lot of... They played 10 people. They like 10 players and there was no Siakam in that game and Yuta Watanabe is apparently supposed to factor into the rotation here. Like, they played 10 guys. And I know that the Banton thing probably only happens because it's a blowout and it's at home. But still, it happened, and he actually was the only guy that showed something, and now I kind of looked at it and said, how do you not give him another look?
He plays ahead of Svi tomorrow, I think.
Right, that's what I mean. So he's actually, I thought he truly did earn some minutes on a team where nobody showed anything, and you have a lot of guys that do similar stuff. How do you not let him play? So they've got 10 guys out there. They're all sort of working together, and it felt... discombobulated. It didn't feel like there was any flow really to anything. Everyone kind of felt like they were in a position that they weren't supposed to be in for the entirety of that game. And some of that just happens because, again, that chain reaction, by the way, is a Rude Goldberg machine. I remembered. It's a Rude Goldberg machine. Thank you. Thanks to nobody, by the way, for helping me. The guys behind the glass, they're just having a little chat back there. They're like, chat, 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 chat. Oh, we're having a little chat. Oh, where were you guys? You're supposed to be in my ear, supposed to be supporting me and helping me. No, keep your little chats up.
So
this is great.
When I talked earlier about how Fred VanVleet is a good leader for taking the mistakes of the entire team on his own shoulders, we're now seeing the opposite of that.
No, but I did. That's it. I did everything myself, and I did it with no help.
And
I
let everyone know.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't it feel better that you were the one that remembered the machine?
It does, because I got to yell at them.
Exactly. Also, like, I feel like 70% of my job here is looking stuff up while you finish a point.
But so to finish it, it's just that they played 10 guys and it felt messy. It felt sloppy. And I guess if there was anything that surprised me, it was simply that it looked kind of like what I expect. You tell me a G League game looks like, where there's kind of is it your turn? Is it my turn? Who's who's doing what here?
You know how broken my brain is with G League stuff is, Delano comes out and plays so well, and I'm like, damn it. Like, I need him at Paramount Fine Food Center.
Hey,
maybe Malachi's there then. That's something I want to talk about later, actually. Malachi.
That's my biggest surprise of the game is that if you would have told me that 10 players were going to get minutes and Malachi Flynn would get none, that I would have said he's hurt. He was not. We'll discuss that later. But I want to do Blake's concern index later in the show. And I think that I'm going to lead my question to you asking about Malachi Flynn because, it's that one was tough. And the only text I sent you last night that was kind of angry was directed towards Nick Nurse asking him to play Malachi Flynn at this point, that it was kind of like, now you're embarrassing the kid. And then Banton goes in and plays the way he does, and then it kind of washed over it a bit and goes, well, you know, what are you supposed to do?
And that's the thing is, like, we saw that a little bit in preseason, and I assume behind closed doors in camp, that was the story as well, is that Banton's won the spot for right now.
Yeah, so concern index, I think I'm going to bring up. We did a lot on the scoring. I'll probably talk a little bit about the center rotation, what we saw from the centers, and Malachi Flynn's no show in a game where the Raptors spent a lot of it down 20 points and entered the fourth quarter with a loss. Fan Morning Show. JD Bungus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy, and Lupe Fiasco.
I would like to say that I'm really upset he didn't play this last night.
Here's the thing about being Lupe Fiasco, where you only have one song.
No, but he didn't.
You have to branch out and try to be like, this is my opportunity. Because
everyone was upset on the timeline.
Yeah, of course they were.
Kick push, and I'm like, I don't know if he has any other songs.
No, he doesn't. I'm sorry, Lupe Fiasco. I remember listening to you for a brief period of time in university when this song came out. Nothing held like this, right?
That beat is great.
It's a cool idea. Hip hop blending with skateboarding.
I wish it was my Oxcord Friday again. I'd be putting this in.
But in my mind, this is, again, how I know I'm going to go. I went, wow, they got Lupe Fiasco. That's quite a get for them.
What about Cardinal?
well, he's I, like, I'm pretty
he's
sure he's on retainer for the Raptors. Like, right. He's just like, I think he lives at the arena. And they're like, Cardinal, get up. He's like, all right, I'm on my way.
Was it weird that Drake sat there and didn't perform?
No,
he can't. He's too big never, now, right?
Yeah, of course not.
Imagine he grabbed the mic.
No, it's got to be the All-Star game here for him to get on stage or get
he's
on the mic.
Too big.
Yeah. So, yeah, Lupe Fiasco felt big in the moment. And then as it was happening, I thought, oh, right. Name your top five Lupe songs. End of list. After Kick Push.
Looking real jacked, though.
Did he? I didn't see him. Good for him. Good for you, Lupe. Way to stay in shape.
Yeah, he clearly didn't play Kick Push because he's pivot off of skateboarding to weightlifting. Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Lift.
Let
push.
Me tell you.
Lift.
Being a top heavy guy is tougher on a skateboard.
Yeah, I can imagine. So. We're going to do something that Blake has been doing for a while called the Concern Index. So before we do that, Blake, just set it up, what it is.
Yeah, pretty straightforward. People tend to overreact to small samples.
Don't look at me like that when you say it.
But sometimes there is truth in small samples. So what the Concern Index is a regular check-in on some worrisome things about your Toronto Raptors, and then I will contextualize just how concerned you should be.
Can I start?
Please.
Does she have a choice?
No. You had some.
Go for it.
So, Raptors lose last night, and I saw somebody tweet, like, they waited 300 days or whatever to
600.
Win at home. Yeah. I don't like putting it that way, though. I like putting in half because it makes me feel better. Nope. Like I haven't just lost 600 days of my life.
Yeah. How's 603 going to hit on Saturday
I don't like, here's, can I ask people, please? Don't retweet the Raptors first home win in 600 and whatever days. That's
it's
just such
be
a cheap pop.
All, no, you know
I hate
it's going
it.
To be up
it's
there.
So these pandemic tweets and markers and things of like, you think you're clever. Oh, they haven't won here. We get it. There was a pandemic. They didn't play.
You
here.
Know, what's going to be really sad though,
what?
Is if they go on a little losing streak to start the season and it's like the Ailish to put it in office terms, the 0 days without nonsense and people just have to keep correcting.
Yes.
Like everyone's got a draft saved of 600 days and they have to just keep going in and changing the number of days.
Yep.
Well, this brings me to the Concern Index, Blake. So the Toronto Raptors last night, I think that one thing was very clear. They can't score. They just lost to a Wizards team with one of the worst defenses in the NBA. Maybe
the worst last
year.
Yeah,
but they're a completely different team. That was one thing that I thought. Although when I say they're a completely different team, they added players like Montrezl Harrell and Kyle Kuzma, who are not exactly known as shutdown players, right? So they score 83 points. They're at home. And somebody does the tweet of the wait has to go a little longer for the 600 days. And I go, ugh. And the tweet goes, but they're playing at home to the Mavericks. And I go, well, that's likely a loss. So you're going to wait longer after that. So I decided to go, I'm going to pull up the old schedule. I don't see a lot of wins here for the Toronto Raptors out of the gate, especially with no Siakam. Let me go over this quickly. So on the road tomorrow against the Celtics, let's just play this game out. The win or loss, you guys just kind of say whether or not you think it's a win or a loss. On the road against the Celtics.
Loss.
Yeah. At home against the Mavericks.
At home against the Mavericks on a back-to-back, and Dallas is not on a back-to-back.
Yeah.
Loss.
Yeah. At home against the Bulls.
Loss.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
DeRozan return.
Yeah. That's one that if it
too
wasn't
emotional.
For...
Yeah.
If I wasn't certain DeRozan was dropping 30.
Yeah. But maybe. He's going to, so that's why. Yeah. So loss. At home for the Pacers.
Win.
Okay.
Pacers are very banged up. They're not that good, I don't think.
Well, okay. Blake says win, then
I mean,
say win.
They just pushed my Hornets.
Nate Bjorkgren revenge game.
Okay. So, at home against the Magic.
Win.
Okay. On the road against the Pacers.
On a back-to-back, I'll say
a loss.
You probably split the two with the Pacers.
Okay. On the road against the Knicks.
On the road against the Knicks, they're going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say win on that one.
Oh.
Anyway,
that's a lot of losses.
And then you get your rematch with the Wizards.
I'm just saying that takes you to November.
Yeah.
Yikes.
So
I mean, and we're still not at
no Siakam.
Pascal Siakam.
Yeah.
No. This is what I'm saying is all these games. This is as far as I'm willing to go with. There's definitively no Siakam.
So you're looking at like a 3-5 start, maybe.
I would say at the very best. At the very very best.
I don't know. Weird stuff happens.
It would be pretty weird. I think the Raptors are starting 0-4, and that's a lock.
I don't think it's a lock. I think. I think Boston and Dallas are going to be difficult games. I think Chicago is a winnable game.
I
would pick, like, right this second, I would pick a loss, but that's a...
Like, I'm just saying that...
Basketball games, like, we're talking, like, 60-40 for a lot of these, so...
Then there's a little stretch, like, after that Knicks game where maybe Siakam's coming back, where they have the Wizards and Cavs, where there's a couple opportunities for wins.
I don't think he's back based on the latest time. Like, based on what Bobby Webster said on our show yesterday, like, he's just getting back to practicing, and, you know, it's a contact thing, right? Like, he's got to get through contact and get not only the strength back, but the comfort.
So that's good, because November 7th, November 10th, and November 11th are the Nets, Celtics, and Sixers.
Celtics and Sixers both on the road on a back-to-back.
Yeah, so I just keep, like, the first 12 games of the Raptors season, essentially, are going to be without Pascal Siakam. And out of those teams, I think we saw potentially 4 wins. Concern index for just where the Raptors are at right now and how quickly this season could sort of get away from them.
So, we'll call it a medium hot.
Oh, that's how you judge them.
Yeah, I mean, it depends how I feel that day. Sometimes I'll...
Like wing flavors.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That.
But we should tell the audience, medium hot is on which end of the scale?
Of
like,
concern.
Am I the one having a hot take, or it's a high level of concern?
No, my level of concern is medium hot. So think like a 4 out of 5, but there's also like a 6 for the like suicide wing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We're going to do chicken wings. I don't know.
I like chicken wings.
I'm hungry.
So everybody likes chicken wings.
I'm hungry. Your chicken wing brand here. Mm-hmm. So this one is concerning for a couple reasons. And one is the difficulty of the schedule, which is just straightforward. Two is that you can get into bad habits early.
Mm-hmm.
If you are playing from behind a lot and you are, you know, the vibes take a hit or whatever, there's room for trying to do too much to fix it. You know, a guy like Van Vliet putting too much on his shoulders, or Nick Nurse shortening his rotation so the young guys aren't getting developmental time. There's a lot of things that can get worse when you're losing. The biggest thing for me, though, is that the early part of the season, to me, and I don't mean the first 10 games, I mean like maybe the first 30 or 40, are all 82 games are created equal? Yes. But the leverage on these ones are higher because this is such a pivot foot year. And Masai even said on the broadcast yesterday, you know, he used the word rebuild. And he didn't mean...
I can't believe you said it, not me.
I'm so happy. As soon as that was said, I was like, we're talking about this tomorrow. Yeah. I wrote it down.
So he didn't mean we're going to blow it up. He was talking about letting the young guys play through struggles and stuff. But I think that, you know, it hammers home what we talked about with Bobby Webster yesterday and Michael Grange. And it's that there is a pivot here. Mm-hmm. And there is a point in the season at which the Raptors are going to have to decide, is Dragic out? Do you see what you can get for Chris Boucher? Do you think some bigger picture stuff? And that's why I think the leverage of the early part of the season, and this is why when we were doing, you know, win total over unders and stuff like that, it's like it's 36.5, which feels like a good line, but I feel like there's almost no chance they're close to that line. They're either playing well enough that they're in the mix for like the 7-8 seed in the East, which puts you around 500, or they're underwhelming enough that the front office looks at it and is like, okay, well, we maintain this pivot foot for a reason. Let's pivot. So a 12 game poor start. And then, you know, you look at maybe say 5 games where Siakam's still getting his footing back and you're tweaking the rotations around it and stuff like that. I would, it's not. And then even if you look beyond that, they also have that killer 6-game West Coast trip right around when Siakam comes back.
Right. So, one thing I thought of last night when Masai did that interview, and I know you're right, he clearly didn't mean we're going to rebuild. Like, he wasn't announcing that they were about to tear down the roster trade Siakam and do me. But I did feel a little bit like it was a Freudian slip to a certain degree, and that it made me realize there's probably a little bit more organizational clarity than we have made it seem as media members, who are kind of afraid to say some of these things at times. Or I think a lot of the people who talk about the Raptors don't want to say some of those things. But it's like, yeah, guess what? this team is not going anywhere currently constituted, and they're not a tweak away from being a contender, and there's not a superstar out there. They're not trading Scotty Barnes to add a piece, right? They're not trading draft picks to add a piece. So what do you think the most likely direction is for this team? It's pretty obvious. So Masai saying those things, mm-hmm. and the way just that the Raptors were last night, where they closed the gap to 15 and it's not an automatic timeout, they let Scotty Barnes and Banton try to play it out, right? And yep. also it was a real reminder during that stretch of just how Chris Boucher has no conscience. He just will take any shot. It's like he's like, you give him one. There was a little pump fake OG is like, I'm not going to shoot this one. He kicks it over to Boucher. Boucher's like, what are you doing? I'm covered too. I'll just fire this over top of somebody. I don't care. But I couldn't help but feel like watching that game last night that this is going to go in that direction, and that it's when Bobby and Masai are having those conversations that we asked Hollinger about, right? And he's like, well, we didn't really have them because we were the Grizzlies and we were trying to win. That their conversations in private are probably a little bit more leaning towards, hey, how are we going to pivot from some of these pieces? How are we going to rebuild this stuff? And how are we going to make sure that players stay engaged when we might be one of the worst teams, one of the worst 10 teams in the NBA this season?
Yeah.
Thoughts? That's, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think...
next concern?
Yeah, Ailish.
Next concern. Okay, rate the spice level of Malachi Flynn not getting in any minutes in the first game of the season when they're down 20, 25 points after we had already talked about his season and his projection and the confusion around what's he doing this year? Like, where is he fitting? What's his role? We had Bobby Webster on yesterday and he said he just needs to go out there and shoot and perform, and then he doesn't get an opportunity in a chance where he could have went out there and done something. Is this a concern for
you? We're gonna go hot honey garlic.
Whoa, here. Hot honey garlic.
Because it can go a couple different ways.
Okay.
And I think it's a bigger concern for Malachi individually than it is for the team. So the
these
team,
ratings are so confused. Hot honey garlic. Well, oh, what is
it's
that?
Hot, but it's also a little sweet.
You guys said you wanted the numbers.
I like wings.
So I would say from the team's perspective, this is probably only like a 2 out of 5. Like, Banton is okay, and it's a long season, and you're going to get Malachi Flynn mm-hmm. in the mix at some point. For Malachi Flynn, I would say this is closer to a 4, because this is the second year in a row now that you've started the season with your role unclear and the coach saying publicly, we need something different from you, and you need to give us what we're asking you for. And there is just a skill set versus role disparity here. And obviously we can't see behind closed doors for practices and camp and stuff like that, mm-hmm. but it's pretty clear contextually that Banton has outplayed him to this point, at least in the sense of how the Raptors want their backup point guard to play. Mm-hmm. Now there's an element of Malachi Flynn is a first round pick who has 3 years left on his contract. And if you're giving out 10th man minutes to someone who's maybe not going to be all that effective, he should probably be getting them over someone like Svi, mm-hmm. As good a camp as Svi had. The big question for me with Malachi Flynn right now, a little selfishly, is if Banton stays ahead of him, is Malachi Flynn becoming the rare guy to do a second year in the G League? Okay. And he only got 6 games there last year. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he got the full developmental experience.
It was like a bubble thing, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. yeah. And he got called back up, and then he was one of the players that contracted COVID.
No, I had him on the show literally after he came off some kind of 35-point game down in the G League. Then they called him up to the Raptors, mm-hmm. and I got to talk to him.
And then, whoops.
Yeah. Can I give you a rating?
Yes.
It's a 9 out of 5 for me, concern level for Malachi
That's
Flynn.
Spicy.
Because I'm not just putting in this one game. Mm-hmm. I'm putting in everything. When Kyle Lowry was being shopped and the whole discussion around Kyle Lowry being traded was happening, a lot of it surrounded, well, you got to make room for Malachi Flynn. Okay. Got it. Then they go into an offseason where they not only draft Scotty Barnes, who's a point forward, they take Delano Blanton. Banton. I'm going to get that name wrong because a billion times. I'm sorry, Delano. They draft 2 guys who can handle the basketball, who are young and who are needing reps, who are going to take away things from Malachi Flynn. Then they keep Goran Dragic. They say, we're not going to flip him immediately. Don't worry. We're not going to get rid of him right away. We're not going to press on this trade. We're going to wait it out. We're going to see how it goes. So they trade Kyle Lowry with part of the reasoning being, I'm just saying I'm not moving the goalposts here. I know everybody in Raptorsville loves to move the goalposts constantly, nonstop. It's they have to re-sign Lowry, then Lowry goes, and it's like, oh, it had to make sense that Lowry goes. Malachi Flynn didn't get in a basketball game where the GM, the same day who said on the show, what does he need to do? He needs to score. Mm-hmm. What could the Raptors not do last night? Score. That's the one thing this guy's supposed to be able to do, score basketballs. And every player, Svi Mykhailiuk, come on down. Banton, come on down. Scotty Barnes, you want multiple possessions? Come on down. It didn't matter. I think there was probably another player on that bench they would have gone to last night before they went to Malachi Flynn. They're making a statement here. And so I just look at all these pieces together and I go, okay, so wait, Siakam is going to come back, who also needs some ball handling duties, right? He's going to have some touches. Yuta Watanabe is going to come back. They're not playing 12 players. They're not playing 13 players. Where do you get your minutes? You think he's going to the G League? He's 110% going to the G League.
I think
welcome to the G League, Malachi Flynn. This is where you live now.
Only one of him or Banton would go to the G League. At least during the portions where they're on the road.
All I know is this cannot be good.
See,
I just laid out, right. I don't know how we could interpret that any other way than this team is really low on Flynn.
Two out of five from like the, is this concerning for the team? Because like rotation wise, like it's not costing
me.
It's not going to cost me.
Okay. I misinterpreted.
I thought you were playing it down.
Two of five from the team, but four of five for Flynn.
Okay. Like, I'm still nine of five.
I'm much more concerned.
Nine of five because he's heading to the 9 of 5.
Yes. Thank you. 9 of 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Okay. So next time when we do 9 of 5 concern index, we'll do Mississauga roti spots.
Yeah.
Instead of this convoluted wing thing.
Mm-hmm.
JD's breaking the scale anyway, going on hot ones with a 9 of 5.
I just, it makes me feel not great. And I can't envision what it felt like for him last night as he's trying to clap for guys that are coming to the bench. The team's down 20 freaking points. They can't score. No one can get a bucket.
Yep.
And you can't get a touch. I can't get a minute. I can't get, you know, I'm telling you right now that basketball players, this isn't hockey where he's going, this is a great team concept. Like that guy last night was pissed. That guy last night felt embarrassed. There is no doubt in my mind that Malachi Flynn felt that way. 0% does a guy not know that he was a first round pick who was supposed to get minutes, who was supposed to come in and score and didn't get an opportunity to do that when the team was down 20 freaking points to the Washington Wizards at home. Tough. They embarrassed him last night.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks. It's a long season.
Okay, next one.
Next concern.
I have one.
Yeah, you're up.
Of course you do.
Scotty Barnes, 6 turnovers, 5 personal fouls.
Yeah, the fouls are more concerning to me. Okay. I'm gonna say this is like a 1 out of 5, though. It's his first professional game. He had one of the very best assist-to-turnover ratios in the preseason in the entire NBA, which it's preseason data, but I think with a guy this young and this inexperienced, we're looking at kind of the whole sample of what we've seen so far. He was clearly trying to do a little too much and he was sped up. The 6 turnovers are going to happen when you have a rookie forward that you're empowering to be a ball handler and a playmaker. And I mean, it's good tape and stuff. The fouls are a little more concerning because he didn't have the best defensive game in general.
And he looked shocked when some of those were like obviously fouls.
Yeah. And he got like, you know, he lost guys on cuts a couple times. And like, this is the thing is like, Scotty Barnes is going to be a very good defender and he'll probably be a solid defender this year, but he's a rookie against NBA offenses and NBA talent. And yeah, Bradley Beal's going to rook you once in a while in a game like this. So the fouls are more concerning for me just about where he's at in terms of speed of the game defensively, but the turnovers you're going to have to live through.
So I only bring it up because it's a pretty jarring side by side.
We can't do all high concern stuff too.
No. But I will say that my only actual reason for bringing it up or even feeling a slight touch of concern is he was drafted because of the defense and the playmaking. And it's one game, and obviously he's a rookie, and who cares? Like, right? You're right. The one ranking is definitely the one that I would put it at too. But if you're drafted for playmaking and defense, I want to see playmaking and defense, and that's not 5 fouls and 6 turnovers.
Yeah,
that's it.
I the one, this is not related directly to your point, but nine rebounds was incredible.
That was nice. Yeah, he plays he's so easy to love, right? Yeah. Easy to love. He plays with a ton of energy. He gets on the boards. He's great in transition. He's just enthusiastic the entire time. He does.
He's going to get some more fouls on some of those defensive rebounds, too, where he's just like body checking a guy with an arm out.
Yeah. First impression, I thought it's funny. Like, you watch, he's an eye test where you went, wow, that was really fun. And then you look at the numbers at the end of it and go, ugh.
Ailish, another concern?
I wanted to talk about their centers a bit.
Okay. Good one.
Yeah, because I know you had a take on the centers yesterday we didn't get to, but I think the closest that they have to like a traditional center would be Precious and Ken Birch, right? And they both had pretty bad turnovers like heading up the court. So I just like, I'm kind of confused who's going to play that role well and what the situation is with centers right now with Raptors.
Yeah. So this is a 3 out of 5 and it's not a reactionary 3 out of 5. It's a, we knew coming into the season that this was probably going to be a concern. And as it turns out, having two guys you'd classify as really nice backup centers is not the same as having something you'd classify as a good starting center and a good backup center. Mm-hmm. So I think part of this resolves itself with, to me, and I said this during the preseason, and it just like really got hammered home last night, Precious should come off the bench. With the way that they operate as an offense and a five-man unit in the starters, Birch's lower usage and kind of steadiness and do the small things is going to fit a little better. And in that second unit, Birch doesn't help those younger guys create advantages as much, where Precious is a little bit more chaos in the same way that Chris Boucher can be. And I think there's a little bit more identity the second unit with Boucher, Achiuwa kind of being, and whichever point guard kind of being this chaos engine a little bit. So I think that resolves a little bit of it.
I'll say one thing about this though.
Yeah,
again, it felt like, to me, same thing with Dragic, where it went with Ty goes to the veteran, that Precious got in there because he had a good camp and Cam wasn't really available.
Right.
And so maybe the reasoning on this one was these were the two guys from camp. They have a little bit of chemistry with each other coming from Miami. We're going to put them together tonight, but we do know, like, all the things you're saying make too much sense to me.
Yeah, it's put them together in the second unit.
Right, no, that's what I mean, is I just think that eventually they're going to get to that place. Yeah. So my thoughts on the actual rotation of it, I would say the concern index is low.
Yeah, but the fact that you don't have an, like, you're starting another season with a huge question mark as to who's starting at center.
Yeah.
And whether you can play against other top centers and stuff. And it's not as bad as last year.
Yeah.
And certainly there's a lot more upside in it this year. And they survived last night. They only gave up 7 offensive rebounds.
Yeah.
But it's, I think this is going to be like an ongoing question. And I know that leads to kind of another question is, does the back and forth between Birch, Achiuwa, and even last night they played 2 or 3 minutes with Boucher as the center. Where do fans swing on this, JD? Because this is your unused prop from yesterday, right?
Well, yeah. Who ends up being the fan favorite at center? So if I'm concerned about anything from that game, it's not the way that those guys get their minutes or the way that they get used, because I think Nick Nurse is really smart and I think he's pretty callous. And he's not going to let feelings dictate this, right? He's going to put people in the best positions to succeed. And I think that when a lot of smart basketball people like Blake are telling me over and over that this is the way to do a rotation, I agree. And I think that they know that too. What I would say I was a little concerned with yesterday is Precious was showing things in the preseason. He showed things during the Olympic run.
Definitely. And excellent. That was... That Olympic run and the exhibitions leading up to the Olympic run were they not fundamentally changed my opinion of him, but like certainly shook off the, oh, he didn't end the season that well in Miami.
My fear when they got Precious was mitigated by those things to a degree. Well, not the things, because some of them happened after, but when they were first rumored to even be in on Precious at the deadline, I thought perhaps really don't need to go get a guy like that. They, you know, those guys are kind of, I believe, available in abundance. Then there was a little bit more of a showing and I thought, oh, you know what, maybe I underestimated what this guy's offensive package could become. Maybe this guy is a little bit more versatile than I thought. Maybe he is going to become the fan favorite this season. And I didn't feel great after that game. I felt like he had a really tough time inserting himself in the game, that his hands around the basket looked kind of like brickish, which I really didn't love. And I don't think is a thing that, you know,
it's
you need
a
large
sample.
Though,
yeah. He's struggled to finish in close.
Yeah. But you know what I don't want from my big guys that are supposed to run to the rim?
That you're especially using as a role man.
Yeah. Struggle to finish at the rim. So there were certain things where I'm really trying not to sound overly reactionary to this, but some stuff you look at and go, that didn't look like a rim running finishing big man. And I kind of thought maybe that's what he would be. And there was a little bit of a Bismack Biyombo feel to it. And I went, I don't want that.
There's 81 more games. We got it.
81 games. You can't teach hands, though. You can't teach soft hands.
That's a lot of opportunities to bring the concern index back.
Yeah,
over
I like
the course
this.
Of the season.
Let's bring it back.
So, I don't know did you make that Precious Achiuwa most improved player bet?
No. I just thought of all the ones there, plus 10,000.
I was going to say, because I think that as of even one game in from plus 10,000, it's like plus 100,000 after one game, I think.
It's also, that's the most, I think, of all the awards, the most, like, the narrative gets set early.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
So you're out, Precious.
The narrative
you cannot improve.